Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
And I think to myself, the guy sitting across from me is really, in some ways, the inspiration for that kind of thing. I really cut my teeth at this station making show opens for you.
Right.
I did.
I used to stop you in a hallway. Good morning, everybody. John, great to see you.
You too, Vic.
I could tell you're still using Dove soap. Your skin looks beautiful, soft.
Thank you very much.
Hang on. I didn't introduce you officially because I actually can go back to 1996 and do that.
We're live on the air. My show is going on right now, so they're going to hear all of you. Everybody at once, just yell at me and say, throw me in the pool, please. One, two, three. I love that. I love that. Now, one more time. Let me hear you say, first time caller. That's beautiful. Let me hear you say, WBT. That's not bad.
It's time reception for the Jerry V Show on WBT. To get on the Jerry B Show, dial 570-1212, 1-888-422-1212, or star 1212 on a Bell Atlantic 9X mobile phone.
Welcome to the Big Show.
Well, those numbers, at least two-thirds of them, don't hold up anymore.
I still get crowds like that. Yeah. Going to a restaurant the other night for dinner, people are yelling, throw me in the pool! Oh, your money's no good in here. It's great to see you guys. How are you?
Hey, man, it's just like old times. I hear your voice on the great Colossus, the mothership, as you used to say, and we're going to have some fun this hour.
Yes,
Jerry V,
we are.
What is Jerry V up to in 2021 as we speak?
Well, what day is it? Today's what, Thursday?
Today is Wednesday.
Oh, Wednesday. And that pretty much tells you what my life's been like.
Well, Wednesday.
I'm on a roll.
Wednesday, you're on my show on Wednesday. I know that much.
Right. And I'm on a roll. Because I try to plan something every day that's a highlight, whether it's a phone conversation with a dear friend, a lunch or a breakfast or a dinner with someone new or someone you know, or a lengthy phone conversation. And since last Wednesday, booked through this Sunday, I have a highlight happening in every day.
So basically at the end of
perfect,
the day.
It's going to be a perfect, what is that, 9 days?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I'll probably go downhill from there. But it's going to be a great 9 days.
I want to talk about a lot of things this hour. Yeah. I want to talk about the NBA. Sure. I want to talk about the Carolina Panthers. But I want to start off talking about you, and just to give people their bearings,
sure.
if they don't know, you were synonymous with this radio station for many years, had a show here 1996 through
202
when the Charlotte Hornets left for New Orleans.
Right.
You left with them.
Broke my heart.
Yeah, I mean, broke a lot of people's hearts. And then many, many years you came back after that, but there's a lot that happened in between that. I mean, you went to New Orleans. You did some sports talk radio in New Orleans. You worked for the Hornets in New Orleans. You got into news radio and TV in New Orleans.
That's right. Yeah, I was like, I've been pretty lucky. I started at TV 18.
Yeah.
Here.
WCCB.
Did a TV show. Remember the TV show?
I do, yeah.
Holy cow. I don't know. They gave me a TV show.
Well, because you and I did a podcast.
That's right.
And there's a lot of stuff that we won't have time to get into today if you want to hear the real detailed version.
And that's only part one of six, right? We're going to do five more.
That's right. I had to start a whole offshoot series.
Yeah, but you know, it all started then, 88, 89, and I didn't get that job under normal circumstances. Somebody saw me guesting on a show, and boom, boom, it happened. And then it was Cy Bayhackel gave me my first gig when he said, I see something in you. And then he gave me a shot. So God bless him. He's passed on since then. And then went on to, we rolled out what was an FNZ, but the all sports talk station.
Yeah.
We did that.
Back when it was, back in those days, it was WRFX AM for a spell.
And yeah, then it was
WAQQ.
What the hell are we doing AM?
WAQS.
Right. And then FNZ.
That's right.
And then from FNZ, where did I go? WBT.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was doing the Hornets. I started the radio career, Bo, ironically, I had a job offer from ESPN.
Really?
I had to make a decision to take the Hornet job or ESPN to college basketball. And they tried to work it out where I could do both. But then when they laid the schedules down, they said that'll just be suicidal. So you got 10 days to make a choice. So I decided to go MBA because I had experienced the high school scene, the college scene. I wanted to try the pro scene. So then from there, the lucky ball fell in my lap. And then Rick Jackson, bless him, love that guy, brought me over.
I was just telling
him. And he just, you know, let me be the playful lunatic that I was.
I told Dan Rakowski from the Knights.
Love him. What a great guy. Yeah. I heard him on the radio. Whoa, what a beautiful organization those people are.
Yeah, he was talking about the many times you've broadcast from that Truist Field down there. But we were talking off the air about you, and I said, Jerry made history on this station because he was the first person to ever split the signal.
Yeah.
When you started in 1996, your afternoon show was on 99.3 FM for several hours, and there was different programming on the AM, but then at 6:30, as you used to say, you joined the mothership and combined the streams and were on both stations.
Were you on the show the day Bob McKillop, the head coach at Davidson, called me from the George Washington Bridge in New York? Picked up the signal.
I've heard the story, but
because the signal then, you know, was like the curvature, whatever, and there wasn't as much interference in the air. That was just before I went to Gettysburg. Remember, I got fitted for the uniform.
I do.
I led the charge. But
like you said, you're a multitasker, and your itinerary is very full.
Yeah. So it was, and then it went from BT, and those were just glorious times. And John, who's producing your show now, was doing it. I remember the first day John walked into the studio, and he looked at me, and he blessed himself, and he said, "Oh my God!" And that was great. So many creative people were here. You, when you were a mere little
kid
with your saddle shoes and bow tie, and you said, "Mr. V, can I get you coffee?"
I don't know about the saddle
shoes. And then when I discovered your brilliance, when I would just walk up to Bo and go, "Hey, Bo, I got an idea." And remember that? I would only give you the parameters of the circus in my head. I remember the day I told you, create something where I'm walking to the stage in front of a massive crowd and the paparazzi is there and everybody, and let's use it as an opening. And you know what Bo says to me, John? He goes, "Okay, let me see what I can do." So like 2 days later, I didn't want to know what you guys were doing because I had worked with John and Byron and Putman and others. I didn't want to know what you guys created because I thought you guys were so good you could be trusted, right? So Bo calls me and he goes, "Okay, come on in. I want to play something for you." And he plays this piece. And I said, "Add one thing to it. Add a voiceover. Let's do a voiceover where I go, 'Get your hands off my suit.'" Right?
Yes,
and you dubbed it in and you did it. And we used it. And your mind started to... You would take the blank canvas.
You allowed me to color outside the lines.
And you would throw colors all over the canvas. And I thought the work was brilliant. I thought you were... So I thought you're a little bit ahead of your time.
Well, the sad thing is that the open that you speak of, I know exactly where it is. It's on a piece of tape that is obsolete, and I have no way of playing it. Like, I can't go back. I saved it on a device that
there goes that setup.
Yeah.
Is this who I think it is?
Hello.
Hi.
Are you talking to me?
Ah.
he doesn't believe me.
Can Jerry hear me?
Yes, he can.
Ken? Is this
Jerry,
the real...
This is Mickey Mantle. I'm in Dallas, Texas.
You're kidding.
Michelle called this girl that's been my agent for about 8 years, and we've been doing those card shows.
Yeah.
And guys, about everybody always says, "How come you're so popular now, you know?" And I think it's because... of people about your age, you know, that was about 10 or 11 then.
Right.
Are like 40 or 45 now, and they have kids, and they bring them to those card shows. And I'm telling you, it's mind-boggling. And people, a lot of times, will say, "Don't you get tired of this?" I say, "Hell no, man. This is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me, you know, because I retired in 69, the spring of 69.
Right.
For a couple of years there, Mickey Mantle just kind of passed out of the picture. And then the next thing you know, this card craze or memorabilia craze came along. And I get bigger lines than anybody now. It's just, that's the only reason I can think of is that people that are about your age are the ones that are, you know, bringing their kids to the card shows now.
Well, stop rubbing in the age, okay?
I have to. I ain't rubbing it in on you. I'm rubbing it in on me, man.
But I tell you, Mickey, though.
Just remember this. When you was 11, I was 31.
There you go. I just remember I used to go to Yankee Stadium every weekend growing up in New York. Of course, my dad would take me there. He was a big Yankee fan. And those great teams with you and Yogi and Roger and Tony Kubek and Richardson and company and Whitey, etc. And the baseball memories. Hey,
Stop.
Mick, no kidding. I was 11 years old. I'm going to go way back. And, you know, back in those days, you can get near the clubhouse if you knew somebody. And I met you out there, gosh, I don't know how long ago that was. And,
well, if you're 40 and you're, if you're 40, how old are you, 40 what?
No, now it's 42, babe.
42? Yeah.
42 years old. And that was a piece of an interview that you did with Mickey Mantle, and you didn't know.
Is this about me or Mickey Mantle, for crying out loud? I mean, is the Hall of Famer going to get any more airtime? Michelle Tafoya, NBC football, who I think is just a magnificent talent. We spent a year together working before she got that job offer. She wanted to do NFL, so she went to an all-sports station. You know how she got discovered? The night she and I stayed several hours over in a studio, and we each split up interviews. We did about 7 or 8 or 9 each when they discovered Michael Jordan's father. And she did such a magnificent job. She got a job offer out of it. But anyway, yeah, that was a great memory with them. Mick.
Tell you something funny about that. That interview, because when you and I were going to do the podcast, the Century Podcast, which, by the way, is at WBT.com if you want to go a deep dive on the career of Jerry V, it's there. But when John Moore saved that cart, these cart tapes that we used to have.
Yeah, right.
So John Moore had that, and he brought it to me when I was trying to find it.
Right.
And we don't have a machine that plays that anymore. So I had to break the thing open.
What the hell is going on here with this station?
And string it through a reel-to-reel machine, and we salvaged it off that tape.
That's magnificent. That's why I told you, talent. You guys are brilliant.
Well, no, but
you
look at you.
Innovative.
Look at you talking to Mickey Mantle. Now, I know the answer to this question because you told me on the podcast.
Right.
That actually, I said, was that the greatest interview you ever did? And you said, actually, there was one where you were sitting around a table and it was Jim Valvano and Raleigh Mussolino.
And people don't nobody in Charlotte, can I brag?
Please
nobody
do.
In Charlotte has topped that yet. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Jerry V, Bo Thompson, The Morning Show, John Moore producing. Lines are loaded.
That's a
Edna
reset.
In Gastonia, good morning. this is one lineup.
Right.
Live. Okay?
Yep.
Mike Arizioni scored the winning goal, beat Russia.
1980.
Jimmy Valvano, NC State, won a title. Yogi Berra, multiple titles, New York Yankees. Roley Massimino won the last national championship at Villanova, college basketball, without the shot clock. Alec Webster, multi-title winner, New York Giants. And Angelo Bernatelli, Notre Dame Heisman Trophy winner back in the day. That is one show, folks, live. They're all there at the same time.
That's the key part, because we got into the details of this on the podcast, and I thought you meant that was the guest lineup over a period of
time.
No,
that was one show.
They were all together.
Live. And how about, and I close it with this question. Remember, I asked them, okay, guys, who won the greatest title out of all of you? And everybody gave an answer, and Mike Arizioni, who was on the hockey team, you know, Roley Massimino goes, are you kidding? We won without the shot clock. It was the perfect game, my coach. Jimmy Valvano tells him, shut the hell up. We won it at NC State. Did you see how we manipulated the clock and blah, blah? And then, Yogi Berra is telling him, none of you guys have all the rings I have. And then at the very end, Mike Arizioni, who was on the hockey team when they beat Russia, he goes, what are you guys talking about? All you guys ever did was beat another team. We beat a whole country, and he put his fist up in the air, and the fans were. I don't think the fans at that time realized the theme of that show. It was the show of champions.
Yeah. I mean, you should have dropped the mic after that show and just be done with it.
Yeah, and just, like, go off and, and write a book, and
exactly.
Be Hemingway, go fishing and have
mojitos. By the
way, how
is that book coming? I'm waiting for that book.
Crooked Wisdom?
Yeah.
Not bad.
How to earn your bones, right?
I don't earn your bones or crooked wisdom.
All right, hold
you'll hear
thought.
About it. I'm doing a comedy zone on July 6th.
Well, this has been the warm-up this past 30 minutes.
This is my warm-up here this morning.
All right. More with Jerry V. In fact, pleasure. I want to ask him about some current things going on, Hornets and Panthers, et cetera. Stay where you are. Back to the News Center first, and Steve Counts.
Real quick, there used to be a Jerry V. burger that I would order at Backyard Burgers.
Yeah, they serve it at the prison now.
The owner of... Or was Steve at the prison and he thought he was at Backyard Burgers?
Well, yeah. Don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Hello. All that stuff was totally ad-lib.
Oh, I know.
As you guys know.
I'm telling you, man. Listening to your show back in the day, I mean, it shaped what I wanted to do. I think John Moore would say the same thing.
And look at you now. You're a total wreck.
This is your brain on drugs. No.
It was fun.
Welcome back. We're here with Jerry V, the one and only Jerry Valancourt, who did sports radio on not only this station, but...
I'm going to start using that line.
Which one?
When I call someone... Hi, this is the one and only Jerry V. Would you like to have dinner Friday? And you hear click.
The one and only Jerry V. Now, I do want to talk about some sports things because there are things going on I've wondered as far as your opinion goes. And here's the thing. I remember very well back in the day. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had fun on your show and all the stuff we've talked about, but there were also some contentious moments back in the days when we were trying to figure out whether or not
we covered a lot of issues.
The Charlotte Hornets were going to stay in town, and then the Hornets left, and you went with them to New Orleans. But one of the big hot topics on your shows in the late 90s, early 00s, was a new basketball arena.
Right, right.
Spectrum Center's there now, mm-hmm. but you remember the days of all the haggling and head scratching over whether or not that was actually going to happen because we had the Tibola Road, 23,000 cavernous New Charlotte Coliseum, which you spent a lot of years in.
Yeah, I did. That was the place to go. I had guys that couldn't get dates for years, so the Hornets got here. And, you know, a good friend of mine, I'll just say his first name, Charles, he was trying to date this woman for like 2 years. She kept turning him down. Mm-hmm. And when the Hornets came, he goes, I got season tickets, fifth row. She goes, I'll go out with you. I mean, it was the place to go.
Oh,
but it was too spacey, though. It wasn't conducive enough for NBA. And then the big battle, the political battle going on. Who's going to buy it? Where is it going to go? Who's going to be the ownership? Everyone thought Larry Bird was going to be the owner and this. And it was awful. And then when the word came we were moving, I never forget the conversation I had with management here. Teams leaving.
New Orleans.
New Orleans. That's the last place. Where is New Orleans? It turned out to be a beautiful 15 years with wonderful people, but it broke my heart because having spent time at Appalachian State, at Davidson, at James Madison University, North Carolina was my roots in the ACC and always going to the tournament and the people that you knew, I was heartbroken. I was leaving North Carolina. And then the move came and I was still stunned. I was doing the show here. I was doing the games. I was coming in on the weekend during a Panther call-in show. I was like in heaven. It was terrible at the time.
So yesterday, David Tepper, the new owner of the, he's not that new anymore, but he's newer than Jerry Richardson, obviously. He's the owner of the Carolina Panthers. He's in Rock Hill yesterday. Mm-hmm. To make a charity announcement and a very great thing that happened in Rock Hill yesterday. I don't want to gloss over that. I mean, this is what we call the Miracle Park. And he and his wife donated $700,000 to Miracle Park in Rock Hill.
Right.
And this will be a place that's designed for kids with special needs. It's going to open on August 21st. That was the reason for the gathering yesterday. But then reporters realized that David Tepper was going to take some questions, and they started asking about other things like, what's the status of a new arena? Let me play
a little bit. Stadium?
Yeah, new, big arena. New stadium. Yes, new stadium, and here's what he said.
Listen, as far as a new stadium, you know, post-COVID, and, you know, we changed the plans. You know, the Eastland plans, we told the city, don't spend the money on us. So we told them to keep that money. We don't expect that we'll be, you know, the situation's a little bit different post-COVID, so we think we'll be in the same stadium. And I will tell you this, because you'll be interested in this. I mean, there's no way in hell, I'll say that word, with a double hockey stick. That I would build a dome stadium in Charlotte, especially after COVID. I mean, the weather's too beautiful, and, you know, if anything shows you, it's really an advantage to have that kind of building. So I don't know if that was your question.
Just the timeline on still wanting a new stadium in general, though.
You know, at some point, that building will fall down. Okay, so we would, you know, it's a question, like I said before, and I'll say it again, I'm not building the stadium alone. The community's going to have to want it. And, you know, if I'm a third and, you know, the community's a third and eventually in the future, and it could be a long way out, you know, people or PSL guys are a third or whatever we do, it's a partnership. And if people don't want it, they won't want it.
That sound a little bit deja vu to you back in the days of the Hornets and new arenas and that kind of thing?
Yeah, but I run the sports world through a different filter because of experience. And I'm not naive as to the goings-on when you're dealing with a big-time corporation, which an NFL team is. I can cut the emotional cord. I love watching my NFL. But I can cut the emotional cord and look at it purely through a businessman's eyes. And if the city helps invest in that, because a lot of the fans are going to go, well, you got all that money, you should pay for everything. Well, he's looking, too, for the city to make the commitment that they're totally into this. So I understand that parameter. That might result in some verbal karate going on talk radio and all with people. Why isn't the owner paying for everything? You know? Well, you got to study your history and see what the reality is. The second thing, I'm surprised. Anyone ask him, what about a retractable roof?
No.
Now, here's why. We're going to fall victim to climate change. That's a reality. So the weather patterns are going to change over the years. You know, temperatures, rain, etc. And he's right about the weather. And I see his point about the COVID. You want the air, the fresh air. That's practical. It makes a lot of sense. But what happens over the next decade or whatever, 15 years, when weather patterns are changing drastically? Is he going to plan for that? So I'm curious about that particular angle. But I get about everything else he said. I'm not going to be naive about it.
I thought the pandemic comment was interesting because it has opened people's eyes to quickly you can ramp back up after a pandemic. And that's not to say we're expecting another COVID-19 next year, but who knows? I mean, after you've been through something like we've been through, now everybody realizes
there's
what you can lose.
There's going to be another virus down the road.
Yeah, or something like that.
What this has done is teach us how quickly we can accelerate and how to grasp information quickly and what the resources are to learn about it, how to combat it, and how you cannot waste time in amping up combating the virus. So now I would think we're going to practice more crisis management on preventive, because there's going to be a booster shot for this. It's going to be like the flu. Let's face that. But I see his point. Charlotte is growing so fast, and we are going to have difficult conversations to arrive at solutions when it comes to the stadium and your football team, etc. So I see where he is coming from in his comments.
You were on the air here on WBT when the Panthers first hit the scene.
Right.
And I remember that we play that clip of you in front of the crowd. That was actually at a pep rally when the Panthers in their second season.
I think they were going to Green Bay.
They were going to Green Bay to play in the NFC Championship only 2 years in. You were gone when the Panthers, you were gone when the Panthers went to the Super Bowl.
Right.
And then back here when the Panthers went to the second Super Bowl, if I remember correctly. What do you make of the Carolina Panthers right now? Do you think the future is bright? Do you think that we're going to ascend to heights we haven't seen yet, i.e. win a Super Bowl? How do you feel about this current makeup?
Toughest thing to do in professional sports is to design and manage a roster. Salary cap, blend the talent. Upgrade the talent to fit any trends, what have you, how the game is changing. They're in a rebuild right now. I totally accept that. What their thinking is on how quickly they feel they can accelerate that process, you know, I'm a firm believer. You try to rise too fast sometimes, like a deep-sea diver, you get the bends and you're in trouble. And how's the quarterback situation going to play out? In the league to win, what they're designing, you have to be able to throw the ball, and you have to be able to defend against the pass.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you see them addressing those needs. And I love the fact you have an incredibly aggressive owner who laid it out on the table and understands, hey, I'm here to win, 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 nothing else. I loved when he said that. I wanted to hug him and kiss him on the forehead, which I will if I eventually run into him.
One day you're a proud peacock. Back in the day on the Charlotte Hornets Radio Network, that was Bob Licht and Jerry V. And many people listening right now, that was their gateway to the V-Man, was the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, that and CCB.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I loved it. Loved the game. I still watch the playoffs till my eyeballs fall out of my head.
Every time I see Hubie Brown, you know, on
it's
TV,
my mentor.
I think about you.
That's my mentor.
Telling those stories about Hubie Brown. And I used to love it when you used to do the games back when you were calling basketball and also had the BT show. And you would do the games from the arena. And every once in a while, if Hubie was there broadcasting for TV or whatever, he'd walk over and sit down with you.
Yeah.
And it was like you were at a professor's.
We used to have endless conversations at the five-star basketball camp where you'd sit there for a couple. He's the guy that helped me design my possession charts for games when he was a. You know, I transferred what he did during games to fit a broadcast. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he was a big influence.
So, I mentioned the Charlotte Hornets. A lot's happened since that soundbite I just played. The team went to New Orleans, and then they became the Pelicans and the Bobcats back here. It came, you know, returned to being the Hornets. Mm-hmm. And now the Hornets made the play-in game this year, but not quite back in the playoffs in recent years. What do you make of the Charlotte Hornets right now?
One, James Brego's a very bright coach. I'm glad they took the option to extend him. He's very, very bright. And I hope they display the patience to build with the same voice and the same style of the teaching. But the roster isn't properly designed as of yet. They must get better at rebounding the basketball. I have a saying, the game is won when the ball is in the air. What are you doing with missed shots? Are you getting second chance opportunities? Are you defending your glass and not allowing the other team to get them? They're 25th in the league in defensive rebounding. That must be addressed. They have to get bigger on the front line. They need a big body that can police the lane and give you some rim protection, but a go-getter that can go get it. And hopefully, Bo, somebody that can rebound in more than one zip code. And by that I mean someone that can go get the rebound and not just have to have it come to him. They desperately need to fill that position, and they need to improve their jump shooting. They need a pure splasher. Now, will that emerge coming into the offseason by offseason skill enhancement? I don't know.
Lonzo Ball fan, are you? LaMelo Ball.
Yeah, LaMelo Ball. I see moments in him when I go, oh, there's an emerging Bo Thompson's creativity. and I think he is blessed with pounds of potential, and I think he can be very, very good. So, yes, I am a fan for now. Needs a playmate that can finish off his stuff. You need that guy when the ball gets in his hands. Oh, there it is. They also need to sprinkle in, hopefully, in filling some of that talent, not with rookies.
Yeah.
Guys that have been in the league so you know what you are getting. I have a philosophy. You got to have a guy on the team, guys on the team, that you can have that conversation with, meaning an older player that's been around that you could say, what's it like? What was it like those playoffs? About somebody that can keep you in line. And hopefully you can also address that by acquiring two skill sets I had mentioned. And defensively, that'll needs to get better. But that's the difficult part with some young talent.
So what about the NBA? Let's pull out and look at it macro. Is this the Nets to win? I mean, should they even play the rest of the playoffs based on what we're seeing from the Brooklyn Nets right now?
If Harden comes back, I mean, they look terrific right now. Milwaukee's walking around befuddled, dazed and confused. They're like the shower scene in Psycho. You know, tear the curtain back and it's over there. If Harden comes back for the Nets and he's feeling good because that hamstring is chronic, I don't see who could beat them. Philadelphia could possibly punch their lights out. And keep an eye on Atlanta. It's going to depend on Joel Embiid's knee. It all rides on that meniscus. As far as Atlanta's concerned, when McMillan took over, they went nine deep. They changed things. They're tough. They're ornery. But the Nets, when they are cooking, they're getting play from their backups. They're getting play from their primary people.
Blake Griffin. I mean, he's a peripheral player.
That's a perfect example. I'm glad you brought it up, how a change in an atmosphere and surrounding yourself with different people can enhance and rejuvenate your talent. And he's been solid for them. So, and then coming out of the West, roll it. You know, Phoenix, Utah, Denver.
Clippers.
The Clippers. I think it's going to come with a Phoenix or Utah.
Yeah.
They're more complete.
Good luck, whoever has to play the Nets in the finals. Good luck, whoever has to play them, period.
Yeah. And thanks for not asking about my Knicks. I appreciate the respect.
I didn't ask because I wanted to make sure I had time to play this.
Friday night, I'm feeling so right. Got a talk show, baby, give me all what you got, cause you know I'm the free dude. Everybody groove, snap your finger now. Let your backbone slip, now throw out your hip. Back head, now bang your head. I say, who? Who? Say, who? Who? Can I get any help? Say, who? Flip it, wicked, hickey, cause I know, baby. He knows it's none down the credit.
Why?
Friday night, and I'm feeling so good, cause I got Joe in the neighborhood. I'm a white man, they call me honky, but I know that I'm the funk cat. That is right. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Oh, my God, help me. There goes my Friday night. I gotta get a phone call going, second thought, I don't think I can join you.